COVID pandemic demonstrated enormous problems in the food system and made them very apparent to everybody. And we wouldn't have had those problems. We wouldn't have had the problem of overproduction of food, people destroying food when people were going hungry, if we had a rational food system that worked better. If you want to revitalize rural America, you've got to bring people back into rural America. In order to bring people back, you have to bring work back that people can do. And that means small regional farms. It does not mean a big industrial agriculture where machines are growing corn and soybeans. But I think if there were real leadership at the USDA on a number of issues, they could make lots of changes that would make a big difference in the kind of agriculture we produce, the way we produce it. That absolutely depends on who they appoint to a lot of these positions. And at least you hope that Vilsack will appoint some of the leading people in these areas.
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
Well, as we wrap up 2020, politics is inescapable. It's just all around us, all over us. I'm getting tired of it, probably. But when we talk about politics, to me, there's not much more important than food politics. And if you talk about food politics, you need to think of the person that literally wrote the book on it and has continues to talk about it, who's my guest today, Marion Nissel. Marion, welcome to Farm to Table Talk.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Marion, just solve all these problems for me. I am so confused and frustrated and upset and somewhat disgusted with all that's swirling around us right now. From where you sit, you've seen a lot of food things happening right now. And I'm tempted to ask you to kind of prioritize what worries you the most, but I think that's an unfair question to start the discussion. How are you kind of sorting this out? You tend to look at all these things, I'm sure, as a citizen, but then you're looking at it as a citizen of food and agriculture, and you look at what you've talked about, what you see taking shape right now. What do you think of all of this, and what are the implications of some of the things that are happening in your mind that are most important from a food perspective?
Well, I think if the coronavirus has done any good whatsoever, it is to make a lot of issues clear that most people in America just didn't know anything about. To reel off just a short list, the essentiality of low-wage workers in the food system, the utter danger at which people who work in meatpacking plants are, the enormous power of the meat industry to force those workers to keep working under really terrible conditions, the fact that we have two completely different food supplies in the United States, one for food service and one for retail, and they don't match or overlap, and the way that food had to be destroyed because restaurants closed and all these other institutions closed, at the same time that food insecurity became just a dreadful problem, even more than it usually is. The enormous amounts of food insecurity in the United States, the way in which our food system promotes obesity and chronic diseases, and how those have put people at greater risk for COVID-19, and the way in which the agricultural system affects climate change. That's just for starters. I'm upstate in Ithaca, New York at the moment, and it is 56 degrees outside in the middle of December. You know, that's kind of fun, but that's climate change.
It is climate change. And, you know, I think I saw one of the news shows this morning before I started, and they were pointing out that Venice is flooding again. They're trying to put dams out because climate change, they're just seeing.
Yeah, the dams aren't working. Big surprise.
Yeah, now they're having all these issues, and you end up getting 4 foot of water across Venice, and before long, we're going to see it in, all kinds of coastal cities, too. So getting people to, you can put on top of everything you just discussed there, is getting people to take climate change seriously and embrace changes there. If we try to connect that broad picture of food, where does the USDA overlap here? Or where's its territory? Because it would seem to me that in many of the areas that you're talking about, the USDA can have a role to play if they're given the opportunity. And the reason I'm leading up to this, of course, is that part of forming a new government, we're also going to end up having a new Secretary of Agriculture. And the new Secretary of Agriculture is going to have a say in suggesting deputy secretaries and administrators and touching a broad range and a lot of the things you talked about right now. So
absolutely everything that I talked about, because the USDA has ended up as the agency that is in charge of food production, food safety, or at least meat and poultry safety, and dietary guidelines for the American public, and food insecurity, doing something about that. If you think about it, the USDA has all this for historical reasons, but it's just crazy to have all this in one agency. And that isn't all they do. They also do international trade and conservation and, all kinds of things. So the USDA could change agricultural policy in a minute if there was political will to do it. But right now, it's an agency that's set up to maintain the status quo, agriculture.
When there's all the speculation of who was going to make up the cabinet of the Biden administration, I always felt bad that they almost like nobody was focusing on agriculture unless you're in agriculture. I mean, it's like they were thinking like the Department of Agriculture wasn't that big of a deal. Of course, you look at Treasury and Defense and Interior and all these others.
Third class agency. Nobody talks about food.
But what you just described is so important. I mean, you talk about feeding people, especially what we're going through right now, and food policy. I mean, you go through that whole list, it would make me feel like, well, people ought to recognize that one of the most important agencies in government is agriculture. Marion, the other thing, to your point, you can make a good case for having, it should have been a couple agencies. But it's not going to be, certainly not in the near term. Mm-mm. I wonder if you had a thought about that, though, because how important the leadership of the agency, because right up until the time that Biden named Vilsack, there was talk, well, do we get instead a secretary that's going to be much more on the consumer side of the programs and the food versus the production? And apparently that was kind of controversial. I'm not sure what you were picking up on that, but I think Congress...
controversial doesn't even begin to describe it.
Well, describe battle.
In the areas that I monitor, there's widespread, deep disappointment in the appointment of Tom Vilsack as Secretary of Agriculture, because it's more of the same. He doesn't represent somebody who is viewed as changing the agency in any significant way. He has a track record. He was USDA Secretary in the Obama administration, and he's got baggage that comes along with that. There were things that he did during that time that he was Secretary of Agriculture that people wish he hadn't done, and feel need to be done better now. I mean, he's an interesting candidate for a couple of reasons. I heard him speak very soon after he was appointed as Secretary of Agriculture under Obama. And I have to say, he gave a speech that I thought was just unbelievably inspiring. He was talking about the need to revitalize rural America, revitalize, repopulate, move resources into it. He had a whole laundry list of things he was going to do that were going to bring people back into the Midwest states, in the agricultural community. It just sounded terrific to me, but none of it happened. Absolutely none of it happened. And, you know, if you want to revitalize rural America, you've got to bring people back into rural America. In order to bring people back, you have to bring work back that people can do. And that means small regional farms. It does not mean a big industrial agriculture where machines are growing corn and soybeans. And they aren't even growing food. That's not even food. That's feed for animals. And the Midwest grows feed for animals and fuel for automobiles. The statistic that I just can't get around is that 40% of United States corn is used to make ethanol for cars. I mean, that is just a mind-boggling statistic, and Vilsack is in favor of that. He represents and favors the ethanol industry, using land that is growing corn for that, rather than for other purposes, such as growing food. So I think that's, you know, that's a real concern, is that if you want to do something to reinvigorate rural America, you've got to bring back people.
Yeah.
You've got to bring back enough people to support schools and stores and movie theaters, if we ever have movie theaters again, and everything else that goes on. And I just don't see him as doing that, because he has a track record for not doing it. And he spent the last years working for dairy management, which is big dairy.
You know, the corn thing, you reminded me that corn, in addition to, you know, the fuels, I mean, it is animal feed, which you mentioned, but then the sugar, you know, yeah, high fructose corn syrup.
But not much of it is used for that. Most of it is feed for animals. Some of it is high fructose corn syrup, yeah. And some of it is basic ingredients in processed foods. But it's not sweet corn. We're not talking about sweet corn.
No. I know that's right. And I guess the other kind of fork in the road we've just passed here is back of the one choice to do something different was Congresswoman Marsha Fudge. Mm-hmm. And she has experience on the Ag Committee. Her area of expertise is looking more attention, I think, to nutrition. And have you had any occasion to have worked with her?
No, I haven't, but I was, you know, I mean, one of the great ironies is that a week or so ago, she made a speech in which she talked about how the housing agency was where they put black officials, and she's ending up in that position.
I know.
When she was a strong candidate for the Department of Agriculture, whether she would have been able to do anything, we don't know, and we'll never know. But it seems to me that if you're looking at it from from an outsider's position at what ought to be, you want an agricultural policy that supports health and environmental policy.
Yeah.
You want agriculture, health, and environmental policy tightly linked, so that every decision that's made about all of them takes into consideration the other two. Mm-hmm. And what we know from a nutritional standpoint is that the same diet that's best for health is also best for the environment. And this is a diet that's largely, but not necessarily exclusively, plant-based.
Right.
And so we should be promoting fruits and vegetables and nuts and grains and these kinds of things, because that would be better for people and it would be better for the environment. But that's not how the system works.
Well, one thing I have to say about Tom Vilsack right now is that things are so rough in Washington today. There's something reassuring about having people that have been there before.
Mm-hmm.
And you point out there's some negatives because they didn't get as much done as you hoped you would get done the first time. But mm-hmm. right now, I'm not sure this is a time you want a rookie in these jobs.
Trump put in rookies and look what happened.
And then I think this next year that'll take place can make a lot of difference too. The deputy secretaries, the administrative secretaries, and so forth. But Marion, the USDA really has its hands tied so much. I mean, they have to play with the deck they've been dealt by the Farm Bill, largely, don't they? There's not too much wiggle room for initiatives.
No, there's plenty of room.
Is there?
Yeah, I mean, there's room. They could have, there's room in the Farm Bill to do a lot of things. But they're also constrained by agricultural appropriations committees. You know, and that's a whole story in itself, too, because the Agricultural Appropriations Committee also appropriates funding for the Food and Drug Administration for complicated historical reasons. You know, a lot of this is historical, and it's very, very difficult to make any changes in it. But I think if there were real leadership at the USDA on a number of issues, they could make lots of changes that would make a big difference in the kind of agriculture we produce, the way we produce it. And, you know, that absolutely depends on who they appoint to a lot of these positions. And at least you hope that Vilsack will appoint some of the leading people in these areas.
Well, one place that might make a difference is that there will be new leadership in the House Agriculture Committee, and there will be new leadership in the Senate Agriculture, a new chairman in each case. They've already named the new chairman for the House Agriculture Committee. I think it's Congressman Scott from Georgia. And the one person, or the couple people, that I think the Secretary of Agriculture has to return their phone calls is the chairman of the House Ag Committee and chairman of the Senate Ag Committee. And so that might create a new dynamic.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
Yeah. So, and I think one thing that it's hard for us to get our arms around is the whole non-farming side of USDA. Could you explain that a little bit, the Food Nutrition Service and how it relates to school lunch and those programs?
Well, it doesn't relate to school lunch.
Oh.
It doesn't. School lunch is under other legislation. The Department of Agriculture determines what's in the school lunches. But it's not Farm Bill legislation that governs it. But yes, it's in the Department of Agriculture too. The Department of Agriculture, 80% of the funding of the Department of Agriculture is on things other than agriculture. It's for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. It's for the WIC program, Women, Infants, and Children. The money for the school lunch program doesn't come out of the Department of Agriculture, but the Agriculture Department sets the nutrition standards for the school meals. So, it's a, you know, historically very complicated situation. The one that's most prominent is the idea that 80% of the Department of Agriculture's funding is for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which the Department of Agriculture hates and wishes weren't there, and, you know, has done, certainly under the Trump administration, has done everything that it possibly can to destroy that program. And yet there it is in the Department of Agriculture. Sonny Perdue, who's the current secretary, has done everything possible to try to reduce enrollments, cut the costs, cut the benefits, and substitute a box program, which absolutely does not work, for the credit cards that people get to be able to spend at grocery stores, which makes much more sense to me. So you have this, you have these enormous programs in places that don't really like them, that don't belong there. The function of the Department of Agriculture is to promote big agriculture. That's always been its function. And that function needs to change in some fundamental way, which is one of the reasons why there was a big push for Marcia Fudge, was because she would be an anti-hunger person who would be much more interested in the anti-hunger aspects of it. But Vilsack is going to inherit this, whether he likes it or not.
You know, one thing that happened in the last couple of years, the last year in particular, USDA got a bunch of COVID money and China money. And so there was like an extra, as I understand it, nearly $40 billion that was being
spent. It went to Big Ag.
Somebody has suggested that if money could have gone as it did in those two different programs, that perhaps they can retask some of that money to help for climate change. I don't know if you heard that.
And I've heard that, but you know, somebody has to have the political will to do that. Someone has to decide. And this is why I say that if you wanted a logical, sensible agriculture policy, you would have one that is linked to health, to food security, and to climate change and the environment. Agriculture is responsible for an enormous amount of climate change. The figures differ in the United States. You know, somewhere around a quarter or something like that. It's very hard to get a hard percentage, but it's a big chunk of greenhouse gas emissions, and it's an enormous chunk. The food system is an enormous chunk of waste and polluting waste. Plastic trash, chemicals that go into the water supply, pollute the water supply, and cause the Gulf of Mexico not to be able to support fish production anymore. Agricultural producers don't have to pay the external costs, those external costs. They don't have to pay the costs of what our food system is doing to people's health, and they don't have to pay the costs of what it's doing to the environment. So it seems to me the logical thing is if they're not going to pay the costs, they ought to at least fix the system so they're not doing those things. And that requires policy change.
You know, when you talk about policies like that, it reminds me of issues like genetic engineering, for example. There's it's kind of done by committee of the USDA and the EPA and the FDA. Each have a different role to play. And then so many things they have. So it's not only just what's going to happen at the USDA, is whether or not there is leadership at the Environmental Protection Agency, leadership at HHS that are going to be figuring out how they work together on some of these big, broad issues.
I was told that during the Obama administration, the FDA and USDA were working together constantly to try to work on food safety issues. I don't know whether that continued. But, you know, we need a coordinated food agency that looks at these problems as an integrated whole. Right now, each of the agencies that has responsibility for food looks at its own piece of it and doesn't look at what's going on in any of the other places. And that's why we have the mess we do. It's part of why. If we had an integrated agency that overlooked the entire food system to make sure that people have enough to eat, the food is healthy, it's not polluting the environment, it's not contributing any more than it has to climate change, I think we would have a much more rational food supply with problems that didn't show up so prominently when the COVID crisis hit. The COVID pandemic demonstrated enormous problems in the food system and made them very apparent to everybody. And we wouldn't have had those problems. We wouldn't have had the problem of overproduction of food, people destroying food when people were going hungry, if we had a rational food system that worked better.
You know, I just recently heard Jose Andres, the chef of World Food Kitchen, World Food Kitchen? Is that
something like
World
that?
Food Kitchen. And he's just wonderful. But he's making the big case too. Some of the same kinds of things you're talking about, but especially a case that there could be like a food, agency, or just really looking at just the food, and he articulates it so well. I'm gonna see if I can get him on to visit with sometime as well. But there's voices like that that are saying so much more can be done.
Mm-hmm. So, I don't think it's that hard. You just need to have political will, which is something that we don't have, and you need to work within the existing structures, and the existing structures are pretty handicapping. I mean, the idea that the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program is in the Department of Agriculture is crazy.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense at all. I understand completely why it's there. It's there because the only way that Johnson could get the food stamp program passed was by doing a log rolling deal with urban and rural states. You vote for farm supports and you vote for food assistance, and you know, that's how we're going to get both of these passed. That's why it's there, but it's not a good place for it.
Well, now it's the justification or the rationale is almost flipping that, because now the people that are concerned that if somehow it was split away, that nobody pay attention to a farm agency, that agriculture would really be so small without it, that it would, you know, it would be kind of like out of the room and hardly be on the cabinet anymore. It'd be so small.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see how the Trump administration handled that. They handled it by throwing money into Midwest industrial agriculture, much more money than is in the farm bill, at least twice as much more. So that I've seen figures as high as $60 billion. I don't know whether they're true or not. I've never been able to get a clear accounting of how much money got put in to try to make up for the losses from the China trade. Mm-hmm. And the losses because of the COVID pandemic. But that was really a lot of money that could have gone to help people, poor people eat better, but that's not how politics works.
Well, I don't think they got it all spent, Marianne. Might not be too late.
There's still more.
No,
I think they ran out of money on the food boxes.
Well, I don't believe they distributed all the China money yet, or all of the special COVID money for agriculture, because they did step up. Unfortunately, they haven't stepped up in all the areas that need to be getting funding right now, but that area, I think there's a lot of money. One of the things that this reminds me that happened within these last 4 years is there's some wonderful people at the USDA. I've known them over the years, and you get to talking to them, and in their area, they're so committed and they're professional and they're trying to do the right thing. I worried when they ended up shipping big chunks of the agency out to Kansas City.
Small chunks.
Well, okay. Small chunks. A lot of that agency, though. I mean, of the Ag Research Service, the Economic Research.
The Economic Research Service. You want to put me in tears? Let's talk about the Economic Research Service, which was, I always thought it was a national treasure.
Yeah.
I used that research. I thought it was really well done. It was not politicized. It was straight fact-based. I thought it was one of the deep, dark secrets of the Department of Agriculture. And I was horrified when it was no longer a secret, and picked by the Secretary of Agriculture as one of the first things to destroy. And you want to destroy an agency, you move it. That's a really good way to do it. So he moved it out of Washington, D.C. into Kansas City with the ostensible excuse that this was going to bring the agency closer to the farmers. And everybody knew that it was because this agency was doing research that was inconvenient for the president's agenda. And, you know, 3/4 of the people in the agency didn't go. So that essentially destroyed the agency. And the agency is no longer doing the kind of research that it used to do. It's now just doing scorekeeping research.
How much of this
are we producing and how much of that? But the kind of analytical studies that were done previously by people who were absolutely expert on these areas, national experts on the area of analysis of food stamp program, on analysis of conservation programs, on analysis of all of these kinds of programs, are no longer with the agency.
Yeah. No, it's so sad. And I think that's one of those things that Vilsack could almost immediately start trying to reverse, to try to build up.
What I've seen is he's not going to.
I hope he does.
I've seen is it's too much trouble to do it, and it was too small. It was an agency of 200 scientists.
Oh, was that
that's
all?
Tiny. That's tiny.
Yeah, but then you that means that you've gotten rid of 150 of them, and they were wonderful people. A lot of them were really, really smart and able to do things that were valuable. I have nothing against Kansas City, but to be that kind of cavalier about, well, let's just take this whole thing, a chunk of it, and move it away, and not really respect all of those years of experience and dedication and knowledge.
And let's not bother to keep doing the historical series of data that we've been doing for years and years and years.
Yeah.
For me, it was just an incredible loss because it was a research that I used all the time. And the other part about it was freely available, transparent, free on the website, with the email address of the person who was doing the research at the bottom, so, and the phone number. And so if you had a question about it, you could call them up and they answered their own phone. And you get the answer you needed. I mean, this was an invaluable governmental resource. As I said, it makes me cry to think about it.
Well, I don't want to make you cry. I hope we're making a few other people cry, though. Well, not cry. At least think that these are concerns. I'm still hopeful that with some of these folks coming back, and maybe when BillSack will bring in too, that they'll figure out a way that some repairs that need to be made.
I hope so.
And I guess going beyond the hope, Marion, we all kind of wake up now through this fall and kind of newly surprised at things going on. I think, well, gee, I didn't think this was possible. But for people concerned about food and agriculture, is there anything we can do other than kind of like buckle our seatbelt and hope we make our way all the way into February and see what happens? Or is there any advice on how to keep track of what matters and try to engage?
I think you have to make noise. You have to join organizations that are tracking these kinds of issues and working on the kinds of issues that you care about. You have to write your congressional representatives. You have to use the political system in every way possible to try to be heard. And the larger the groups are making noise, the better they're heard. It's just how that works. So there are lobbying groups that are working on food issues. Find one that's doing something that you care about and join it.
Well, so far, what I've been seeing online are the people that are disappointed that didn't want VilSack. They wanted to have a change of face. So we've seen a lot of people saying, well, gee, that was a mistake. They're not saying what to do instead or what to do now, but that's, you know, that's being said. And the other is I'm seeing all these press releases of the companies that want to be sure they're on the good side of VilSack's and saying, we really applaud the choice and he's a wonderful man and we're happy there. So, so everybody's kind of doing their thing right now, but they got to get to a different point.
I think advocacy has rules. If you want to be an effective advocate, you have to have a very clear goal. You have to have lots and lots of people behind you. You have to have research backing up why your goal is worth working toward. And you need strategies and tactics for achieving that goal. And I'm not seeing that in the part of the food movement that is interested in what's going on in farms. I'm just not seeing it. The organic community does that pretty well. They're pretty united. They know what they want. They go after it. And sometimes they get it. But I'm not seeing it for regenerative agriculture, for conservational agriculture, for small scale, for fruits and vegetables. The fruit and vegetable people are united, but they're not united in a very powerful way. I don't know. I want to go out and do organizing.
You know what, Marion? Let's do that. We'll just organize. We'll just have like this great big Zoom podcast and we'll bring all these organizers together and talk.
Get people together and get them to start working toward what they want, because they're never going to get it if they don't ask for it forcefully.
You know, I got to tell you a funny thing here. And recently, it was a protest in San Francisco about farmers, for farmers, but it was for farmers in India. And and Sikhs that I've been talking to them now, they've invited me to one of their protests if I want to come. There may be one coming up. They're actually driving tractors to Sacramento now, and they blocked the Bay Bridge. And I talked to them, and I said, what's this all about? And they said, we think people need to know what is happening with farm policy in India. Well, I'm all for that, but you and I have been talking about what's happening with foreign policy in America. And it's, I just find it ironic that there could be activities going on about Indian foreign policy, and we aren't quite sure how to move forward with U.S. foreign policy.
Well, I can understand that because it's so complicated. Yeah. And I think it's deliberately complicated. I made the mistake, you know, I'm fond of talking about how I made the mistake of teaching a course on the Farm Bill at NYU. That was an act of hubris, let me tell you, because I thought, well, you know, I'll just have the students read the bill and we'll talk about it piece by piece. But it's not readable. It's really not readable. It's a document that is based on decades and decades of previous documents. And unless you have the whole thing from beginning to end, it's you really can't understand what's going on. And there are literally hundreds of programs covered by the Farm Bill, each with its own rules, lobbying organizations, you know, people behind it. And you can't imagine how these things got in there, because the only way they got in there was because of lobbying. So it's all bunches of little teeny pieces.
Yeah,
some of them bigger than others that have gotten in there because of very effective lobbying by one or another group. And there was a period when there were lobbyists for organic agriculture, sustainable agriculture, pilot programs, and it was tens of millions, not billions, but at least everyone felt that it was at least a start. Yeah. In moving in a direction that would be healthier for people in the planet. And I think we just have to go back to that. What will Vilsack do? I don't know. He has to be given a chance.
Well, I think
he ought to be pressured.
Well, I wish him the best. And you know, how many of us might like to have an opportunity to come back and redo something? You know, I think that I wouldn't be a bit surprised that there were some things that, that idealism that you saw with him, and I heard him too when he got started, it wasn't as easy as he thought it was going to be. I mean, I think an awful lot that he intended to get done in agriculture probably didn't live up to his own expectations or his own hopes. And now he gets a chance to come back, and what's he got to lose? He's not going to run for anything else. He's in there. I'm sure he can retire whenever he wants to now. And you think of a man coming back and saying, well, I didn't quite get everything done. I'm a little disappointed in this and that. Let's do it this time. So maybe
the only way he's going to be able to do that is if he's under pressure. And therefore, it's absolutely incumbent upon people who care about these issues to give him every excuse possible to do the right thing.
Well, I use some psychology on that. I don't know if a lot of people we're seeing in the country right now depends on the kind of pressure. When his isn't driven by ambition, it could be pressure to do the right thing. It could be people calling him out and you know, kind of, and supporting him. So it's pressure, but it's also saying, look, you do this and we got your backside. I mean, we're with you. You know, you step up. Let's get this on the table. Mm-hmm. And then these people he gets around him, his chief of staff and his you know, deputies and so forth. You know, I'm a perpetual optimist, Marianne.
Good.
it's pushing me right now. I'm finding it harder and harder to stay that way. I think though, one other thing I thought about back, you were making the point of all of the complexities, both in agriculture, but all the overlap of working together with Food and Drug Administration and EPA and so forth. And it made me think, you know, somehow there almost needs to be an additional kind of almost structure of this interaction with leadership. It's almost like, let's fill all these positions, but maybe there has to be kind of a special committee with the Treasury Secretary and the Secretary of Ag and so forth, of the important role of food, sort of like Chef Andre said, that pulls from each agency and makes it high profile enough. Mm-hmm. You know, in the last administration, there was, you know, in every administration, they'll make the vice president in charge or something that is important to the country or to the world. maybe the vice president needs to play a role with the secretary of agriculture and a couple of others somehow to elevate these issues. And I think the vice president would do it. I mean, she's aware enough of agriculture issues, as you know, in California, that, you know, I could see getting her to a table on things related to climate change and the role of.
Well, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, beyond fingers crossed, I think we can all are happy that you're paying attention to this and sharing your thoughts and suggestions. And we just have to, I think, encourage people to keep the faith, which is my side of the optimist, but I think also your side of keeping the pressure on. And this is no time to shut up and sit back. It's a time to kind of keep leaning in and making sure you're communicating with all of these new people. So it's a time it could be a great time. I'm really stepping over the line, but I'm hopeful that we'll look back at this coming year, 2021, saying this is for food and agriculture. This may be the best one we've seen in decades. Wouldn't it be nice if we could do that?
Oh, what a wonderful idea.
Hey, let's chat again sometime and celebrate those good news when they happen.
Let's check in a few months and see how it's going.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson. If you like what you hear, go to farmtotabletalk.com and follow us on Facebook and Twitter, or go to iTunes to subscribe and give us a review and a rating. Thanks for listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.